I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, work, and study, the Awabakal and Worimi peoples. I extend that acknowledgement to the land on which our listeners meet. I pay respect to elders past, present, and emerging. Thank you to our sponsors, Espresso Warriors Katara and Dark Stories Newcastle, a true crime tour company where you can experience live and interactive crime theatre. Use the code DARKCCJS25 for a special discount. Hello and welcome back to the UON CCJS podcast. In today's episode, I'll be sharing a conversation I had with PhD candidate Tori Berezowski and criminologist Peter Gogarty about their work with the Bridge of Hope Innocence Initiative. We had a lot of fun recording this podcast, so I hope you enjoy it. It is so lovely to have you on the podcast, Tori. And Pete, you're back again.
Oh, I am back. Popular demand, we might call it.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Just a flood of support for the last podcast. And that very sweet email where you asked me to come back on as well.
Yeah, that's right. I don't remember sending that.
That's okay. Yeah. No, I received it. So that's all that matters. That is. Yeah. All right, guys. We're here to talk about your... Is it a company? Is it a program?
I guess you could call it an organization.
Organization. That's exactly the word I was thinking of, but I didn't do enough research before I started. We're here to talk about the Bridge of Hope Innocence Initiative Newcastle today. What are your positions in the organisation?
Well, where do we start?
Where do you start?
Effectively, I'm the manager of the initiative. It started here in about 2019, and probably before that, Nick Xanthi Mallett. Everyone knows Xanthi Mallett, world-famous Xanthi Mallett. Started having some discussions with RMIT University. They had a similar project already running, and they had picked up some of their ideas about initiatives like this overseas in North America and the UK. And so I think Xanth and I met with RMIT maybe in early to mid 2019, and then we took our first students in around about 2020. So Xanth is effectively the director, and most of our cases come through her. And as I said, I'm the manager, but Tori is kind of like my, I think she lets me pretend that I'm in charge.
That's nice of her.
Yeah, and she's actually in charge. So I'll let her tell you what she does.
My personal experience on placement was definitely under Tori. You just sat there and looked good, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, that's
and yeah, that's
a struggle.
You and your platinum blonde hair. That's
we're looking good as a struggle. So,
yep, you must mean you did really well then.
Yeah,
proud of you.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I'll bet all you need your glasses prescription updated. I think Nick.
Maybe we'll see. What do you do, Tori?
I guess you could call me an investigator for the Bridge of Hope. I consider myself Pete's right-hand gal, right-hand person.
Right-hand man.
Yeah, no, person.
Pete and I work pretty closely on all the cases. Like you said, they come through Xanth, and then we gather the students. We sort of come up with a direction of where we want to go, what we need to do, and then we sort of let the students run wild for a little while.
Hmm.
What's the purpose of the Bridge of Hope?
Well, its official title is, as you know, the Bridge of Hope Innocence Initiative Newcastle. The innocence thing is a little bit of a misnomer in the sense that, from our perspective, we are far less interested in whether someone's innocent of a crime that they've been convicted of than in whether or not there was potentially a miscarriage of justice in their particular case. And that could be because there was an administration of justice issue, so some sort of error in either the investigation or the prosecution, or there was an error of fact that might have arisen in that same sort of process, particularly in court, or there's some sort of new, fresh and compelling evidence that wasn't available for use at the time. So, one of the things that the students wax and wane about is, as Tori said, we let them do a bit of a deep dive once we allocate them to a case. And they're never quite sure sometimes whether the person is innocent or guilty. And so we really emphasise over and over again that that's not what we're interested in. Mm. It's about the process. And we are very concerned that the criminal justice system has got a great deal of resources, usually far more resources than our clients have ever had. And for that reason, the system needs to be very, very accountable for its decisions. And if we think somebody may have potentially suffered a miscarriage of justice, then we'll try and help.
How do these, what sort of clients do you take on and how do they contact you?
They usually contact Xanth directly or they'll go through...
Just for people who don't know Xanthi Mallet.
How is that even possible?
I know. Who is Xanthi Mallet?
Xanthi Mallet is... an associate professor here at the University of Newcastle. She is, I guess, the head director, the reason that we have a criminology program here at the university. And she's written a bunch of books on miscarriages of justice. So I think that's sort of how her name gets around in that sort of area. That's how people who think they've been wrongfully convicted know of her.
Yeah.
So they'll contact her directly. They can also contact the University of Newcastle's Legal Centre. They have taken on public interest cases in the past. So we somehow get a letter or an email or a phone call from a potential client. Pete was talking about innocence initiatives in the sense that, you know, people who have been convicted of a miscarriage.
They can't see you doing
they can't see my air quotes.
Doing the air quotations for innocence initiative. but I appreciated it, and I'm sure it came across.
Yeah, of course. So we don't just take on miscarriages of justice cases. We also look at cold cases, missing persons cases, and wrongful death classification cases, as we have most recently named ourselves. So whoever the client is contacts us in some way. We do a preliminary assessment first. So we spend months, usually a semester of time, looking through everything we can possibly find on the case. And we decide whether or not there is something that we can do for that person. Again, we're not looking at their guilt or innocence. We are looking at if there was some... if they had a disadvantage in the case, or the trial didn't go as it should have, or if there's new evidence now that there wasn't back then.
Whether the criminal justice system acted in its correct capacity.
Exactly.
Yeah. And as Tori said, Nick, that can be in a really broad sense for us. So we're not just looking at wrongful convictions necessarily, but all sorts of things where the criminal justice system may not have delivered justice. If that's the best way to describe it.
From investigation to evidence handling.
That's
to
right. And as we're doing that, this is one of those situations where we've got clients or potential clients who are getting a fresh set of eyes on their case. And sometimes the client may well be the loved one of someone who's lost their life. But the other thing that we think is really, really important about this is that final year students, and we draw our students from criminology, psychology, law,
social work,
various disciplines, who are learning how to undertake an investigation or how to keep a very, very open mind when they do cast fresh eyes over existing information. So one of the things we stress over and over and over again is that we shouldn't make assumptions, we should double check everything. And I think the students find a great deal of value in that. And the other thing I think they find value in is that we, as a initiative, if you like, are aware of our own limitations in the sense that not everybody can be a specialist on every topic or issue. So we are starting to develop some good relationships with other people who are specialists in other fields, for example, engineering or medicine, so surgeons, experts in particular medical conditions and that sort of thing, that we can draw in as we need them. And again, the students get the benefit of that expertise.
And I suppose that's the value of running through a university as well. Yeah,
absolutely, because a lot of those people we're talking about, and not exclusively, but a lot of those people are actually other professionals or academics in our university.
Yeah.
We also look at policy issues and individual research projects. So if students don't want to work on a particular case, sometimes they can be difficult or can bring up, you know, potential past traumas or issues that they aren't ready or don't want to deal with. They can work on an individual research project or a policy issue, which, you know, just gives us the flexibility to sort of cater to the students and what would most benefit them in their career. I mean, we had a group of students that came up with some great, great policy issues. I think we actually did it was a twin jurisdiction project with another university. So they worked closely with students from another university and came up with great, great policy issues. And they actually got their policy issues submissions looked at by
policy officers with the New South Wales Attorney General's department.
Okay.
So, and again, Nick, this is not just an academic exercise. And one of the things that has struck me for a long time is that often students do great work on a topic that is contemporary or, you know, very important, but they get a mark and then it sort of sits on their computer and somebody like us thinks, geez, that was a good piece of work. With the Bridge of Hope, we are trying to turn that, you know, sometimes give students the opportunity to turn a great piece of work like that into something that policy professionals in government will get. We're looking at some opportunities for students to have their work published. So, it's another way of giving students some real life experience rather than just an academic one.
And we have the just small plug, I suppose, we have the Essay for Change competition ceremony come up, where students submitted pieces to on specific pieces of legislation they believed could be altered or added to the Attorney General's office, which is really exciting.
We'd like to think that as we gain momentum, and we seem to be gaining momentum a little bit faster than we can cope with at the moment, but as we get on top of things, those sort of opportunities will become more frequent. We can expand the chances for students to do things that are particularly meaningful for them that could be also of benefit to the broader community.
Along those lines, because we attract students from so many different sort of fields, the cases we work on or the projects we put them on, we actually try to use their specific interest. We try to put that to good use. So, you know, if a psychology student comes in, we try to give them sort of a psychology-centered project that would benefit them in their studies, their career, but will also benefit the organization, whether it be a case or a research project or a policy issue. So we try to sort of coordinate the tasks that we hand out based on what they're studying and what they're interested in. We find that that's been a really meaningful experience for all of our students. And we get people, like be having law students and psych students and social workers, we have that, you know, wide breadth of knowledge that we can then draw on to help further the cases as well.
Yeah, I know I personally have a focus on psychology, but I really got a lot of value out of my placement with Bohane in respect to reading more about legislation, understanding trial procedure, police investigations. It was a real step out of my comfort zone into the general work experience in the field of criminology and not in psychology. That was very valuable for me.
And to that end, sometimes students find new things that they're interested in. You know, they're for 3 years they're on this path. Like, I want to be, let's take you for an example. I want to be a practicing psychologist. let's say, you know, you did a task where you're like, actually, this was really meaningful and interesting. Maybe I want to change gears. Like, it gives students the opportunity to either, you know, stick to what they're good at or open up and broaden their horizons and try new things and maybe find new things to do.
And sometimes giving people the opportunity to stretch their skills a little bit. So something that they're not overly confident in but interested in, then this is a very good environment to stretch those sorts of skills and try and gain some more confidence and work in. A lot of people who are nervous about working with other people get an opportunity here to, in a safe environment, to work in teams. Sometimes we've now got students who've come back doing other subjects who are now getting an opportunity to learn how to supervise small groups of students. And one of our colleagues in the law school mentioned to those students recently that is such an invaluable thing for employers to hear that our students have had opportunities to supervise small groups, because it's a real important workplace skill.
Yeah, I forget what I was going to say in response to that.
That was really
great. That's great stuff. Keep it up.
It also speaks to the organization that we've had students come back to volunteer. Like, they're not even working with us because they have to for a course. They're actually just coming back to, you know, they have a couple hours free on campus and they want to dive into the cases some more. I think that speaks volumes to what the organization does, and it makes me very proud to be a part of it.
Thank you for remembering exactly what I was going to mention. I've enjoyed coming back to do some small volunteer experience for Bohemia as well.
I think it is, as Tori said, it's great that from our point of view that students have got a lot out of their formal experience and then want to come back, whether it's because they want to keep getting some more experience or they're really committed to the case that they've been working on and want to help advance that case. But either which way, for us, it's very gratifying and very useful, because if we've got students that have had experience with a particular case come back, they can help us bring the new students up to speed, because that's always one of our challenges as we get further into a case. Bringing a new group of students up to speed on something where there might be thousands of hours of effort already been put in, that becomes very tricky.
I think you calculated it the other day for one of the cases. We are over almost 5,000 hours that we've put into it.
5,000 person hours over a period of time. That's a lot of work.
It's a lot of free labour, guys.
And Nick, I'll make the offer again when you come in again to help us, that I'll double the salary that we were paying the last month.
I'm excited. Oh, yeah. Man.
You might even get like a little certificate.
Really?
Maybe.
Yeah. Tell me, guys. No, man.
Nick was here.
Nick was yeah. He did something. He helped. Just furthering on, like, students who are interested in volunteering or in general volunteering or coming on placement, what sort of skills do you think they develop and learn in their time here when they do come? Too big?
No, that's an excellent question.
No, I think it's a really good question. I think there's a broad range of skills where so many of the students have said, a bit like you said, Nick, and in your case, I mean, it's almost self-evident that you're going to learn a lot. Sorry, that's slightly facetious.
That was so good. Oh, man.
I'm just going to pick this up.
Thanks, Tori.
I think one of the biggest things that the students learn is patience. You know, they come in and, you know,
Tori, thank you.
Whether or not they think they're going to solve the case in an hour like you do on TV, the tasks that we have them on require a lot of patience. For the cases we have, sometimes there's 10, 12, 14 days of trial transcripts that we need to sit and read and understand. And that takes a lot of patience. And I think our students learn a lot of that over their time here.
Yeah, I know I did. It was very confronting, the amount of data we had to... Yeah. It took... I came on for a fresh case that you guys had been working on, and there was hundreds of pages I had to sift through and still achieve some sort of goal or objective by the end of my time at placement. And it was so confronting. It took at least a week to just understand the cliff notes of the case. It was a very complex case, granted. But
But I think, Nick, that's one of the things that's important for our students, first of all, to get that sense of patience about any case that they're working on, and be incredibly thorough. Because if you become impatient, the line you skip over might be the absolutely critical line that could be the thing that solves the case or gives us a foot in the door with the coronial inquest or something. So we can't afford to miss anything. And one of the things I think we stress a lot is that we also can't afford surprises. So we don't want to get a couple of years into a case and then discover something that we should have found in the first week. But I think the other skills are a bit like you said, and I don't know whether it's a skill or it's an ability to develop greater confidence in...
Definitely. Working in groups, talking with a team, conducting briefing meetings in the morning or afternoon.
I remember my first day, and we were reading through the application letter, and we were supposed to make cliff notes on it just for our own understanding, and all of us were struggling to pick apart the critical information because that was what we were supposed to be extracting. And I remember asking you, Peter, I was just like, what do you do about this? Like, how do you separate what's valuable or not? Like, we don't want to create notes that other people will use and not have, like, valuable information that may not seem important to us, but important in the future regardless. And you said, well, it's a skill. Like, we have to practice, you know, it's not like we're going to come into this and pick out all the relevant information. It's something that we have to develop. And I know that was something that I took from my placement at Bohemian, and obviously, and that's obviously, like you said, a lot based on confidence.
Mm.
Yeah. I find at the beginning, the students will write down everything because they don't want to miss anything. But as you do it more, as you read a lot, you can't possibly write everything down. You do get better at it and you get more confident at deciding, this is the important part. You know, nothing else on this page matters. I'm going to move on. And extracting that critically.
Yeah. What's the critical content of a document or a piece of paper or a page? Because I think, Nick, I've said to some students, it's a bit like a first year, first semester student, they get a big document and they've got to make notes on it, and they use a highlighter pen, but everything's highlighted. As you go along,
you can't call me out like that, Ben.
Well,
that's not again.
Specifically mentioned your note. I'm trying to take it a bit easy. But I think, as Tori said, you do develop that skill over your university career about, trying to distill the critical information, and in our environment, that people get an opportunity to hone those skills even more.
I was just going to say, even it's something you learn over your, you know, years of doing the university degree, but even in the time working at Bridge of Hope, I think even if, you know, you do it for the 2-week intensive or the 12-week semester placement, I think from day one to, you know, day end, those skills are drastically different. And I think that's really important and something to take with you in all aspects of life.
Yeah, absolutely. My placement on Bohemian was fantastic, and it gave me a lot of confidence moving into my final year of studies as well. I'm grateful to both of you for that, because you created a very safe...
Well, you got your fingers crossed there, Nick.
You got sorry, they were supposed to be under the table.
Yeah.
And you've successfully run me off my train of thought. Yeah, I really appreciate that.
But that's one of the things that is really, as Tori said a while ago, it's one of the gratifying things for us that we do help people develop their professional skills. Because in the end, that's one of the two reasons why we do this work. The other is to help people who we think genuinely deserve our assistance. But if we can help you and the other students who come through the initiative to be better professionals and get out there. You guys are young and got the whole, you know, your whole career in front of you. Then that's got to be a great thing for the university to have helped achieve.
Yeah, and what I was saying before you rudely interrupted me,
yeah, sorry about
was
that
I'm about to compliment you after that now, was that you both created an environment that was safe, professional, fun as well. Like I had an incredible time there, and I still achieved everything I had to. I developed a lot of skills. I was very, very comfortable on placement whilst still achieving, doing work and feeling like I was contributing to the case in my own respective way. So thank you for that.
Thank you for saying that. And to the audience listening, we did not pay him to say that.
No.
So.
Not a dime.
Definitely not
double. Yeah, two pennies coming to me next week.
Yes.
But I think, Nick, it's also, and this a lot of this is credit back to Zenth for a minute, that her approach to the criminology program here, and this is in one sense an aspect of the criminology program, is to be collaborative, you know, particularly amongst the staff and other staff members, you know, around the university or other experts we might draw in. But also when we get to this environment, that students are getting towards the end of their degree, and I think our whole team tries to treat students more like colleagues than, you know, sponges that can just soak up our wisdom because and our skills, because it's not like that. I try and emphasize to people that they've got their own intellect and their own skills, and we want to learn from that too. So,
and there's also not much to soak up from you, Pete.
Well, that's true. Like, that, once you get past day one, like, it's soaked up about as much of my wisdom and skill as there is to
do. Quite dry.
Which is why I tell people I'm always wanting their ideas, because I don't have too many money.
I was actually thinking, though, jokes aside, that I feel more of a support as a role for a student supervisor as opposed to actually teaching them anything. Because, I mean, most of the stuff that we need to know is in the information that we have available to us, and, you know, we can go out and get more. But I feel like Pete and I are more of a support to make it a meaningful experience and, you know, fill in the gaps of, you know, what happens with this piece of evidence, what happens with this trial. We can fill in those gaps, but I feel like we're more of a support system than actually teaching you anything. You know, it's not a regular class where we're teaching you stuff. Mm-hmm. It's very self-guided. And there's also
like, I know this happened a couple of times on my placement. There was maybe you guys had an understanding about the case, and then the student had read maybe the same information and extracted different information.
Yeah.
And there was a conflict, and then it's not on you to say no, this is how it is. It's you were generally like, oh, can you show us this? Like, what are you looking at right now? Like, maybe we're wrong. Like,
yeah. How many times did a student come into the room and show us something, and we're like, oh, back to square one, we know nothing?
Yeah.
Like, it happened all the time.
And I think because we've got that sort of collaborative approach, we can talk things through. So, something that on the face of it we might think is incredibly important, because we're talking about real cases in a real criminal justice system. Sometimes the most important thing in the world will not get us a foot in the door with a coroner's court or a, you know, seeking some sort of post-judicial review, because we've got to consider the legalities of the situation. A lot of our cases we think, gee, that barrister could have done a lot better job. And we might think we can demonstrate how much better a job you can do. But the reality is, we'll never get a foot in the door because we think some, counsel on a particular case didn't do a very good job.
Yeah, there's no legal basis for it.
No, that's right. And look, there's potential for that, but as bad as some of the representation has been that we've seen, it's never enough to give us a foot in the door for any sort of a post-judicial review or post-conviction review.
No.
So that stuff's useful for students as well. So. And I think one of our colleagues, Sean McCarthy, has, you know, talked about the fact that our criminal justice system, despite being called a justice system, is more about finality than it is about guaranteeing right outcomes. It's like once you've had your chance, you've had your chance. So, yeah, so it's tricky work, but it's important information for students to learn.
I think the students are also really lucky in the sense that they can draw on a bunch of expertise from different people. So, like, Pete has about 35 degrees that of different things in the criminal justice realm that people can draw on. I come from a forensic science background. Xanth comes from a forensic science background. We have colleagues in the legal center, so we have, you know, actual lawyers that can help us with any of the complicated legal questions. And then, like Pete said earlier, working in the university, we have access to psychologists and engineers and surveyors and doctors, like medical doctors. So it's really helpful, you know, when we don't know something specifically. If a student comes to us and asks a specific question, we don't know it, we do have the ability to reach out to our colleagues and other people in the university to figure that out.
And I'm not big on giving advice to anybody, so maybe we just call this a suggestion. But I think there's absolutely no shame, and again, Nick, you should be able to relate to it.
There it is.
There is no shame in saying, I don't know the answer to that question, and then going looking for the answer or looking for someone who does know the answer.
Pete, this is my podcast. How many times? You're not coming back on.
You another one of those emails.
Yeah, how bold is it? Yeah, that's it.
Your fault.
You mean if you get Tori to send it for you? Yeah.
No, I completely agree. I'm the first one to admit, you know what? I don't know the answer, but it's a great question. Let's figure it out. I think no one can possibly know every single answer to every single question. That would be ridiculous and quite boring, I think.
And I think in people's professional lives, Nick, that is a really important thing to do, because too many people think they've got to bluff their way through or pretend they know everything, and it's not possible. So it's far better to say, well, look, that's really interesting and it's potentially really important, but I don't have the answer right now, but I'm going to go away and work it out, or I'll find somebody that can help me work it out. I think that is true professionalism.
Yeah, and I think my experience with Bohemian really resonates with that as well, because I spent my entire project identifying evidence which was labelled, marked for identification. And you came to me at the start, it's just like, we don't know what this means. We don't know what it means. Like, there's different types of evidence. Why are these different types of evidence labelled this way as opposed to admitted as exhibits? And that was my entire project. And I still didn't complete it. I was able to scrape together some information on different types of evidence, but I couldn't complete that task because we just didn't know. But we have to know, like when we're working on these cases, we have to know these smaller things because we don't want to let these things slip through the cracks.
No, exactly right.
Yeah, and at the end of my report, I still said I don't know. I think I said I'm unsure about the rest of these. I've done what I can for this, but like that's for the next set of students to take, and maybe they'll start the project again, and they will contrast our works, and maybe there'll be similarities, maybe there'll be differences, maybe they'll pick up on things that I missed. But
We do stress that to the students that, you know, in your, whether it be a 2-week intensive or a 12-week semester placement, even if we give you one task, you're not expected to finish that task because it could be such a massive task that could take years. Like, some tasks are small and okay, yeah, you can finish it, but you know, a task the size of the one that you had, there was no way it could be done in the time that you had. And that's normal, that's okay, like we expect that. And that's why we have students, you know, every semester and every semester break, so we can keep those projects and tasks going.
I'm really grateful I had the chance to talk to you guys today. This has been great.
Even me?
I was looking at Tori, but you know, and my fingers are crossed. So yeah, it's great
to be here. We're always happy to talk about our work always, at Bridge of Hope. Always.
Yeah, and I think, Nick, you mentioned before about students getting involved. Our only rule, like, we love having people come back and volunteering, but again, because we want people to graduate and get out there and get real jobs and make the world a better place, our big proviso is that we don't want anyone coming back to help us at the cost of their education. You know, we want people to finish their degrees. So it can be very easy, having we've both done it ourselves, spend late nights and weekends ploughing through something you think's important to the detriment of something else. So we don't want students to have their lives suffer or their other education suffer.
No, of course not. Yeah. All right. Well.
So thanks again for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's great.
Thanks for being on, guys.
Geez, we make your life easy, don't we?
You do. You're so nice. Yeah. I'm just going
to
cut you off there.
Yeah, thank you.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to the UON Crim Podcast, hosted by Nick Minch, run by the University of Newcastle's Criminology and Criminal Justice Society. I would like to thank today's guests, Tori Berezowski and Peter Gogarty, and the podcast team, Jess Horn and Zalia Windham. Please stay tuned for our next episode. You can stay up to date by following the UON CCJS on social media. Thanks for listening.